If you've flown in or out of Phoenix recently, you might have noticed that Sky Harbor International Airport is changing. Not only are there a slew of new restaurants and stores there, but the city spent almost $600 million to modernize Terminal 3. The SkyTrain has connected the terminals to parking and rental car locations, and it's about to be expanded.
The city of Phoenix, which runs the airport, is about to invest another $100 million in expanding the SkyTrain, and they've announced new funds to promote international flights to the airport, with a deal creating new nonstop flights to Frankfurt, Germany.
So what do cities get for all of the investment they put into their airports? For more on that, I spoke with Megan Ryerson. She's a professor of city and regional planning at the University of Pennsylvania.
Many cities believe that their airport is their growth engine, and it is the key to economic growth. Phoenix Airport, many other airports have economic development impact studies, where they estimate the number of jobs that are directly supported and the sort of economic benefits, not just direct, not just the money that's raised on the airport, but also the indirect benefits. What sort of business development is encouraged by the airport? And in fact, you see a lot of airports, when they're considering expanding, looking at airports like Atlanta or Denver, who expanded their international airport, and they were able to bring new international business headquarters to the city. That's considered, a huge win, and international businesses clearly need international air service. So, one way to kind of lure these companies is to, build up your airport and build up your international presence.
Right. And so how successful are those efforts for cities, though? Is everybody like Denver?
And that's the big question, right? Because every airport cannot be like Atlanta. And there's sort of a lot of competition between airports. Actually, in my research, I study these air service incentives that airports use to encourage new routes. What you find is that the hub airports like Phoenix, like Denver, like Atlanta, like Dallas, they're competing across the wide geography of the U.S. and even globally, to be an international hub, meaning to be a place where a major airline has transfer facilities and other airlines operate important international flights. There's only so many flights to go around, so how does an airport make itself attractive? One way is air service incentives, actually providing direct funds to an airline to build new air service, to open up new routes. Another way is to have a beautiful terminal, to have easy groundside access, like with the new train.
Right. And so Phoenix is making those moves. Do you think Phoenix is one of those hubs that could be the next major hub?
I think Phoenix is in a precarious position. And I say that sitting in Philadelphia. I think we're also in a precarious position. The airlines have certainly learned how to be profitable. We're in a completely new era of profitability for our domestic airlines. However, the way that they've been profitable is that they've reduced flying. And they've closed a number of hubs, so Memphis and Cincinnati. These used to be hubs for major airlines, and they are no longer hubs. And so I think the question with the American Airlines U.S. Airways merger, I think the question is, what is the fate of Philadelphia, Charlotte, and Phoenix? Because we look at what United and Continental and Delta and Northwest did; they certainly closed hubs along the way. I'm not sure if Phoenix will sort of emerge as a very strong hub or actually be sort of drawn down by the airline because they have sort of robust operations in LA and in Dallas.
Yeah. So how does an airport authority sort of weigh the costs of expansion with predicting these sort of economic impacts? Is this a risk?
Investing in an airport runway and a terminal is risky because you're really at the whims of the airline. And so what I found in my work looking at expansion plans and so on is that, airports, they want to expand, they want to innovate because, they want the airlines to look at their airport as an important airport in the system. And that's not a bad strategy, but it really indicates how the airport's job is to provide infrastructure and provide sort of the best service for the airlines, and the airline's job is to say which routes make us the most money.
All right. So as far as Phoenix Sky Harbor goes, we'll have to wait and see 20, 30 years down the road how this turns out, it seems.
Absolutely. We'll be watching.
Megan Ryerson is a professor of city and regional planning at the University of Pennsylvania. Megan, thanks so much for joining us to talk about this.
Thank you.
And Lauren, what about all those new stores and restaurants we're seeing at Sky Harbor?
Right. Well, Sky Harbor has added a lot of local restaurants, especially in Terminal 4, and now they're in the middle of kind of a retail push. They've added 21 new retail locations in the past 18 months. So can airports save retailers who have really been suffering from online competition for years? That's the question the Phoenix Business Journal's Stephen Totten tackled in a recent article, and he joins us now with more on this. So Stephen, let's start with this question of why are we seeing so many retail stores pop up in airports? Are people really shopping in between flights?
The city always touts Sky Harbor as like the state's largest economic engine, so naturally they'd want to invest in that. But the other thing too is you have this massive amount of people who are essentially trapped in the airport. And I mean, where else do you see people who are going to go buy a magazine or candy or what have you on such a normal basis? No one's going to go out and buy a magazine just for kicks, like if they're not in an airport. But if you're in an airport, you see people buying newspapers and magazines all the time.
So it's like you have a captive audience.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So, and this seems to be a little bit of a surprise that retail is finding a home at all, because brick and mortar stores have been having such a hard time as of late. Do you think that this is a planned strategy for them to try to find somewhere where people will go into a store and shop there?
I don't know if it's a widespread strategy where we can say, where these retailers say, we can open in the airport, that'll be fine. But you definitely see retailers like, there's a Sunglass Hut that just opened in Sky Harbor. I mean, I don't think any kind of broker would go seek out a Sunglass Hut to put in a shopping mall like Fashion Square now,
right?
You know? So there's definitely an advantage there. So some retailers may be seeing that advantage. But on the other hand, too, you see Sky Harbor's been putting in some local retailers as well, who may not have had that in their plan, but it's absolutely a lucrative option for them. Like Bunky Boutique, which has a really small brick and mortar space in downtown Phoenix, mm-hmm. next to Giant Coffee, they opened a space in Sky Harbor. And there's another store called Roosevelt Row that kind of features all the artisanal things that go on in that street in downtown Phoenix. You know, if there was anywhere else that those retailers are looking for a brick and mortar, like none of them would have been as good of an option as the airport.
Right. So what's behind this? Let's talk about that a little bit. So are the airports really doing that well? Are there numbers that show people are really buying things and spending a lot of money while they're in an airport?
Well, I can't speak specifically to Sky Harbor's numbers as far as their sales go, but they have added more retailers in the past 18 months than they had overall.
Yeah.
And as far as global spending goes at airports, Global Data just released a study about airport spending. In 2016, spending globally at airports was $38 billion, and they expect that to grow 27% to $49 billion by 2021. So that's a pretty big spike. I mean, as far as overall global retailing goes, it usually grows by like 3 or 4%. And mind you, it's like $25 trillion. So that's quite a bit more than airport spending. But nonetheless, airport spending seems to be growing at a faster rate.
Right. And are more people flying right now? Are more people flying internationally? Those people tend to spend more money?
Yeah, there is definitely more international flights. And, you know, Sky Harbor is definitely pushing for that right now. We've already gotten, I think, 2 or 3 new international flights. And there's this incentive plan to add, I think, 5 or 6 more. So there's definitely thoughts on that. Asia and Europe is where most of the spending is coming from. And so there's some international flights and spending going on there. U.S., it's speculated that because of kind of Trump's immigrant rhetoric, that we may not be getting as much spending as we could.
Mm-hmm.
But there were about 43 million people that came through Sky Harbor last year.
Wow.
And potentially a lot of them were shopping. So to know that you kind of have this captive audience of 43 million people, that can look like some dollar signs for people.
Yeah. So do you think this is sort of the future of brick and mortar as retail moves online mostly?
I don't know if it's the overall savior of retailers, and you know, who really knows what the future of retailing will hold. But in the meantime, for these brick and mortars who are looking for a space and don't really know what they're going to do as far as e-commerce goes, this could be a good option.
All right. Stephen Totten covers retail for the Phoenix Business Journal. Stephen, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
But not everyone agrees that brick and mortar retail stores really need saving.
Our next guest argues that conventional wisdom that online retail is on the rise and shopping in actual stores is declining is wrong. Barbara Thau is a contributing retail reporter for Forbes.com and writes the Minding the Stores weekly column. She recently wrote about brick and mortar versus online retailing and started the piece with, "To say that digital commerce is killing off physical stores is lazy thinking and a half-truth." The show's Mark Brody spoke with her more about this.
When people talk about online, online is really a euphemism for Amazon. Amazon is in a class by itself. So there's Amazon and there's everybody else. Amazon is indeed the retailer, the nation's biggest e-commerce online retailer. But beyond Amazon, the other people, the other retailers that are in this space are all the big brick and mortar retailers. So that's to say that Walmart is huge, and so is Apple, and so is Home Depot. These are all brick and mortar retailers. And the majority of the brick and mortar retail's business is still brick and mortar. And the majority of retail sales are still generated in brick and mortar stores.
Why do you think it is then that the narrative seems to be that anytime a brick and mortar retailer fails or is going through financial problems, online commerce is the culprit?
Well, I think it's an easy answer because we want sound bites. We don't want nuance. And it's a complicated answer, what's happening. As I said in the story, it's a mixed brew of factors. We have a nation that is vastly overstored. We have essentially a retail landscape that is built for 1999, not 2017, when there was really no online shopping. So there's that factor. Then there is the element of e-commerce taking some market share. Also, after the recession, people's spending habits changed. I mean, there's so many different factors. So it takes a while to talk about what's happening. And the easy go-to is online.
Do you find that for those brick and mortar stores that are still, as you say, make up the vast majority of retail sales in this country, are they actively trying to increase their online presence? I mean, I see TV commercials for Walmart.com as opposed to Walmart. I mean, are these stores trying to boost their online sales?
Well, what they want to do is boost profitable sales, so whatever that is. I mean, right now, online sales are really eating into retailers' profit margins. They're the necessary evil. You have to be in the online business, but essentially the store's business is more profitable than the online business. An online order is a pretty expensive proposition and takes a big chunk. Each online order takes a big chunk out of profit margins. So what you're seeing is retailers trying to enhance their stores with digital, trying to get the shopper in the store via digital channels. So that's why you're seeing more and more of a push to buy online, pick up in store. You get the shopper in the store, and then they make an impulse purchase.
One of the other things in your piece that really surprised me was the fact that millennials and Generation Z, the generation after millennials, prefer brick and mortar stores. They like going into a store as opposed to sitting at their computer or on their tablet and buying things online.
Right, right. I think there's this sort of assumption that younger shoppers want everything digital and they don't want to be in a physical space, which isn't true. What they want is to be connected, and Gen Z want to be connected via their digital devices. So the important thing there is that if they're in the store, being engaging, making it easy, having, you know, something as simple as making sure your stores are Wi-Fi enabled.
So given what you write about, I'm curious what you make of Amazon's recent purchase of Whole Foods. Obviously, Amazon, you reference it, the largest online retailer. Whole Foods, obviously a brick and mortar store. What do you make of that?
What I made of that was like, wow, okay, now they get serious. So, you know, these guys are not, I mean, it was before, it was testing, it was dabbling, and this was a very big move because when you think about it, Amazon, a store here, testing their bookstores in the submarkets, testing the Amazon Go supermarket grocery format, which is, you know, cashierless essentially. This is a big deal because they're going to own the $15 billion Whole Foods chain that marks a really big commitment to brick and mortar, and they have 460 stores to play with, to use, bring their discipline, their born in the web innovation to a national chain.
Do you think that this could maybe be a test case for what the future of retail might be as far as maybe marrying the online and brick and mortar presence together?
You know, we used to always say that Walmart was the bellwether of the retail industry. We can say that Amazon is the bellwether of the online retail industry. So what they do is extremely influential, and we'll see what sticks. I mean, once again, it's all about the consumer.
Barbara Thau is a contributor to Forbes.com. She writes about the intersection of retail and consumer trends. Barbara, thanks a lot for your time.
Thank you. Pleasure.
And you're listening to The Show.